here at Avalon Airport for the Airshow 2017, and I've just seen the historic arrival of the new F-35 Joint Strike Fighter in Australia, touching down after a very impressive flying display. Supporters of the aircraft say it's on the cutting edge of defence technology and that it will serve Australia's air combat needs into the future. But the plane also has had its fair share of critics who question the cost and need for the aircraft. It's Friday, which means the period of trade days is about to come to an end, and at 2 p.m. the gates will be open to the public. Record crowds and levels of interest are predicted for this year's air show. After watching the arrival of the Joint Strike Fighter, I headed inside to the exhibition halls and caught up with Major General Jim Molan.
I've been to just about all the Avalon air shows, and of course there's the naval equivalent and there's the land force equivalent. And these big shows go on throughout the cycle of the year. And it's an extraordinary opportunity for government, defence forces and business and society to come together to understand what Australian defence is all about.
I asked him about his address yesterday to the Geelong Defence Alliance.
The Geelong Alliance is an alliance of all the organisations within the Geelong area, political, industrial, academic, local government, who are dedicated to taking Geelong into the future, to transitioning Geelong from where it was with its great and extraordinary industrial base, and going into whatever the future is that there is for Geelong. I gave a talk where I stressed the importance of understanding for Australians, for understanding defence. We are facing probably the most uncertain period of time that Australia has faced strategically since the end of the Second World War. So 75 years ago, Singapore fell. 75 years ago, the bombing of Darwin occurred. On those occasions, we put our faith in the power of our great and powerful friends, first the British and then the Americans. And on both those occasions, we put far too much faith in our allies. We were immorally unprepared for the appalling things that happened between 1939 and 1945. And I am very sceptical of the level of self-reliance that Australia has at any time. We need to be able to say to ourselves, as Australians, we don't overly depend on great and powerful friends, but you can't get away from your great and powerful friends. For example, Australia can never manufacture a joint strike fighter. Mm. That will be entirely beyond us, but we can maintain it, we can operate it, and do all of these kind of things. So some of the most advanced stuff we may never be able to do, but we need to be very, very careful about what we can do and what we can't do, because 75 years ago we nearly suffered extraordinary pain because we were not prepared.
So the Joint Strike Fighter, that was fantastic to see that land, and I put something up on social media about it, and the haters already came out straight away saying that it was a lemon, it was too much money, that we need to reduce military spending and all that sort of thing. I mean, what do you say to those sorts of people that always, I suppose, look to cutting military spending when they want to fund their programs?
Oh, well, Australia is an extraordinarily rich country. We are something like the fifth richest country per capita. Per capita GDP in Australia, we're about the fifth out of 200 countries. We are about the 13th largest GDP in the world, and Russia, of course, is the 14th. Plus, at about 23, 24 billion population, we are about the 53rd largest country in the world. We have something. A lot of people who knock defence spending think that the world is a lovely place. Well, I've got news for them. The world can be a very uncertain place, and it is so often so simplistic. This country is an amazing country, but we should not assume that everyone loves us the way we love ourselves. And I never predict, I never get into the scenario game of saying who's going to attack us and where, but we have almost a perfect record in predicting who we're going to fight. We've never, ever got it right. Our biggest enemy at the moment is uncertainty. Now, we have enough riches in this country to do the NDIS, to pay our people to work hard on Sunday, to pay off the deficit, to do all the social programs we want to do, and to defend ourselves well. And the only thing that stops us is the effectiveness of our governance. But I don't engage with people who take a simplistic view of defence versus social programs. I live in this society. I depend on this society. I want both the social programs and I want to be defended.
And how does our defence force compare to other nations around the world?
Man for man, our defence force is as good as anywhere in the world. Our air force is probably as good as anywhere in the world. Our navy is in the middle of a rebuilding program, essentially because simplistic people in the recent past refused to fund the navy. And our army is the funding of the army is giving priority to the other two services. The question that we need to keep asking ourselves is what is the need, given the uncertainty of the future? How do you manage that uncertainty? And I never take the attitude of saying I want one more cent from the government for defence. But what I do really politely ask government all the time is, what is the risk that government is taking in not funding defence? So if the government says, if the government kind of, you know, traditionally we try and spend, we have had in peacetime a view that 2% was an ideal percentage of GDP to spend on defence. That's a peacetime requirement. Rarely have we ever got there. We got there under Howard. We went down to 1.4 under Rudd, Gillard, Rudd. We are about 1.9% now. Most of NATO doesn't get to 2%, and it's fascinating talking to you, Mitchell, today and to your listeners, because last night you may have noticed that Sweden reintroduced national service, national conscription in Sweden. Why? Because they face greater uncertainties than we face. Poland has re-established its ability to mobilise its population. Why? Because they face uncertainty. The only enemy that I know that we face at the moment is uncertainty, and all Australians should demand from their government, what is the risk they're taking in our name in funding or not funding defence?
So you said you're not in the business of making predictions, but you know, issues like the South China Sea come to mind at the moment. So is sort of to the north where the main potential threats are going to come from?
No, I don't believe they are. I absolutely agree with a common way of expressing threats to the Western world, not just to Australia. Australia is part of the Western world. You and I are rich for the simple reason that we trade with Europe, we trade with the Middle East, we trade with the US, and we trade with North Asia. That's what makes us rich. That's what allows us to do the NDIS. All of that. And there are four countries and an ideology which represent uncertainty for the world. The four countries are Russia, Iran, China, North Korea. The ideology is Islamic extremism. We need to be able to not fight them. We need to be able to manage them until we have to fight. And I don't make predictions that we're ever going to fight anyone, but we need to be prepared because the world is an uncertain place.
The idea of military service that you just raised is an interesting one, given that some people have this idea. They say people that can't find work in Australia or people that are criminals or whatever should do military service and it's going to teach them good values and all that sort of thing. Is that an idea that you support?
No, not at all. It is the Defence Force of Australia is not a substitute for incompetent parents.
I then toured the Geelong Defence Alliance exhibit, showcasing a range of local businesses on the cutting edge of advanced manufacturing. One of them was Chris Chester from Bullex.
Mitchell, we're a fire training specialist organisation in that we design, build and install fire and emergency training infrastructure.
And how did you get started? Because you're obviously a business that started out in Geelong, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. About 10 years ago, I had some pressure from my brother-in-law in New York. He wanted me to start the business in the Southern Hemisphere. So I did that about 10 years ago, just on a very small budget and very small equipment. I mortgaged the house, threw the house at it and bought some equipment, and now we've got about a dozen employees, and Australia-wide and into New Zealand as well.
Your headquarters is based in Geelong, but it's sort of expanded out from there, and you've got a pretty big footprint, it seems.
Yeah, I think it was told to me once that we're a small company that rings pretty big bells, and I think that's true. We've got technicians around the country. Our equipment is fairly advanced propane burners, so you need to be a Type B gas fitter and technician to work on it. So they're thin on the ground, so we train them and we send and we bring them in and they service our equipment that's around Australia.
Another was Tristan and Chris, representing Fibertech Solutions.
We work with High Modulus Fibre, supply the marine and maritime industry through the mining sector and civil, and sliding into defence capability now.
So to explain to the layperson, essentially what you've done is created things that look like cables, but they are 1/8 of the weight of a traditional steel cable, but have a lot more strength, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. All our clients are looking for lighter weight products to make it easy for their crews.
And so what we're doing is taking ordinary people and ordinary gear and moving it from the 1970s to the 2020.
And how would you describe the material that they are made out of for someone that doesn't have an engineering background, for a layperson? Because the mind boggles as to how you can create something so strong and yet so light.
The fibre holds its molecular strain in tension. Basically, it's a high-density plastic. We weave it into all types of different fibres.
And you're based in Geelong, is that right?
Yeah, Tristan's in Geelong and I'm in Adelaide.
So Chris heads up Maritime in Adelaide. We're doing all land-based stuff here in Geelong.
I also caught up with Paul Nicol from Air Radiators, a business based in Lara for over 30 years, employing 130 people.
Yeah, we're a Geelong-based manufacturing company, employing about 130 people in the local area. We manufacture cooling systems and heat exchangers, pretty much to cool any type of diesel engine application. So anything from an on-highway truck through to a train, through to a defence vehicle.
And you employ quite a few people in Geelong?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got most of our workers come from the Cryo and Lara area in Geelong. We've been employing 130 people in total across the factory that we have here in operation.
I asked each company to comment on the state of Geelong manufacturing, given the high amount of media attention.
And that's exactly what I'm doing here, is to support the Geelong Defence Alliance, because if we can get some more contracts, we will build in Geelong. So these things are large fabrications, they're modular fabrications, so we can do it in Geelong, we can ship them out. We're waiting on a couple of tenders that announcements, one in New South Wales. If they come through, we hope to throw quite a few million dollars worth of work into Geelong Fabricating, as we've already done with other projects. So, it's all about Geelong for us, absolutely.
So you believe Geelong does have the skill set and the training required? Because obviously what you're creating is, I suppose, some higher level manufacturing?
It is, and yes, they do. There's no doubt about it. Some of the companies like Air Radiator, IXL, Ostenge, really smart people, really.
It's about $200 billion about to be spent in defence. Geelong can tap into that and be a big part of supporting defence capability for Australia.
And there's been a lot of talk about Land 400, obviously. Are you talking about ancillary expenditure outside Land 400?
There's a lot bigger projects than just Land 400 in defence at the moment. We've got to look afar for it. There's Land 121, there's C5000, there's a lot of big projects on the go.
Aircraft Airworthiness Management provides services to operators of aircraft. It's been fantastic, the air show, what the Geelong Defence Alliance has put on here with the stand has been fantastic. It's been very supportive of the business, and yeah, it's been great. So I'm seeing a lot of positive business future there at Geelong.
And what's the future hold?
For me, we're looking for trying to find some for more contracts. We've seen some, you know, this air show has given us a lot of contacts and networking with companies that we wouldn't normally see.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, things are going reasonably well. You know, we're certainly seeing that there's challenges for manufacturing in Geelong, but I think that if your business remains competitive and you've got a technological and innovative viewpoint on how you do your manufacturing, then certainly you can remain successful in the local area.
To listen to the full interviews of the Airshow 2017, head to mitchellsfrontpage.com.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.